Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Illinois, Friday, July 27th. Hello again. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson with our weekly look at market activity from Wall Street to the agricultural fields and feedlots across the country. And we begin, as always, with a look at the market activity on Wall Street on this last trading day of the week. The major indices fell today. Weak earnings reports from major technology companies led to a big drop for that sector. Intel shares down 8.5% after the chipmaker's data center businesses missed estimates amid some stiff rivalry from Advanced Micro Devices. Stock for AMD up 3.2%. Twitter Incorporated. Shares of that company down 20.5% after the social media network reported a decline in monthly active users versus the increase analysts had expected, and then warned of further drops as it deletes phony accounts. The S&P 500 Technology Index fell 2%, the most among the major S&P sectors. Shares of Apple, which is set to report quarterly results next Tuesday, down 1.7%. Shares of Microsoft and Alphabet Google, which had soared after both companies recently reported strong quarterly results, dropped 1.8% and 2.5%, respectively. Alphabet shares touched an all-time high earlier in the session, but then reversed course. The pressure on tech stocks actually started on Thursday, after Facebook gave a dismal forecast that caught investors off guard about growth prospects in a sector that has led the market toward record highs. One analyst said there's a bit of concern, perhaps growing, that the bloom is off the rose for these tech stocks, that they are not invincible. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 76 points for the day, ending the week at 25,451. The S&P 500 down 18 points for the day, and ending the week at 2,818. And the NASDAQ Composite dropped 114 points. That's about 1.5% to 77.37. The NASDAQ exceeded Thursday's losses to register once again its biggest daily percentage drop in a month. For the week, the NASDAQ down a little more than 1%, but the S&P rose nearly 0.2%, and the Dow, cushioned by promising developments in trade relations between the United States and the European Union earlier this past week, climbed up 1.5%. Intel and Twitter's disappointing results overshadowed data from the Commerce Department showing the U.S. economy grew at a 4.1% annualized rate in the second quarter, and that's its fastest pace in nearly 4 years. It came on higher consumer spending and farmers rushing soybean shipments to China to beat the tariffs. Economists and investors cautioned against putting too much weight on the growth, which matched expectations as the trade-related boost is expected to unwind later this year. AbbVie shares down 3.6% after sales of its Humira drug in the second quarter barely beat expectations. Amazon shares jumped as much as 4% to a record high of $1,880 after the e-commerce giant forecast strong returns coming up. A look at the oil market this week. Oil prices today fell, weighed down by a drop in the U.S. stock market, but Brent still marked a weekly increase, supported by easing trade tensions and a temporary shutdown by Saudi Arabia of a key crude oil shipping lane. Brent crude down 25 cents a barrel for the day, ending the week at $74.29 a barrel. And West Texas Intermediate U.S. crude down 92 cents to settle at $68.69 a barrel. And that marked a fourth week of declines, down about 2.4%. The oil market pretty much brushed off government data today that said the U.S. economy grew in the second quarter. It was a strong number that suggests strong energy demand into the end of the year, according to Phil Flynn with Price Futures Group in Chicago. And the reason why we're not rallying off that is because it came in line with expectations. When you're running that kind of a gross domestic product, that is a lot of oil. U.S. energy companies added three oil rigs in the week ending July 27. That's the first time in the past 3 weeks that drillers have added rigs to the production of oil. And the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies were not discussing an option to boost production by more than 1 million barrels a day. So, let's take a look ahead. We look to next week, and what do we keep an eye on next week? Well, some of the stuff we don't know because it happens unexpectedly. But next week, the Federal Reserve's Federal Open Market Committee starts its two-day meeting on interest rates on Tuesday and will announce its decision on interest rates on Wednesday. Apple is expected to report an increase in revenue and profit for the third quarter on Tuesday. That's helped by bouncing back sales of its iPhones. Tesla will release second quarter results on Wednesday, approximately 1 month after announcing it met its most recent target of building 5,000 Model 3s per week, as part of its long-delayed ramp-up of its latest vehicle. Analysts on average expect the company to post a loss of over $600 million after a period of intense spending on the Model 3. The robust second quarter GDP growth data, investors' attention will shift to next Wednesday's employment report for July. The Labor Department expected to report this coming Friday that non-farm payrolls rose by 195,000 jobs in July after increasing by 213,000 jobs in June. The unemployment rate expected to fall to 3.9% from the current 4%. And also on Friday, the Commerce Department will likely show the trade deficit unchanged at $43 billion in June. On Tuesday, Procter & Gamble expected to report an increase in fourth quarter revenue helped by higher sales of its beauty and home care products. And investors will also watch for management comments on the company's move to protect margins. Chinese online search giant Baidu is expected to post a rise in its second quarter profit on Tuesday. Insurer MetLife announces second quarter results on Wednesday after the markets close, as some investors begin to question whether the stock is beginning to look expensive. Wireless carrier Sprint Corporation, which agreed to be bought by T-Mobile, will report its first quarter earnings results on Wednesday. And Prudential Financial will report results for the second quarter on Wednesday, but that'll come after the closing bell in what analysts expect will be a strong quarter driven by performance in its variable annuity division and international businesses. Luxury apparel maker Ralph Lauren expected to report an increase in first quarter sales and profit as a healthy U.S. economy and higher wages have helped consumer spending. And Chesapeake Energy Corporation expected to post a smaller profit in the second quarter on Wednesday, hurt by lower prices of natural gas compared to a year ago. Some of the other items that came out this week, a couple of reports on home sales. And home sales fell for a third straight month in June because of a persistent shortage of properties on the market, and that pushed up house prices to a record high. The National Association of Realtors said on Monday existing home sales fell 0.6% to an annual rate of 5,380,000 units last month. And sales in various parts of the country falling below what they had been. The median house price increased 5.2% from a year ago, reaching an all-time high of $276,900 in June. And then the next day, they reported on sales of new U.S. single-family homes, and those sales fell to an 8-month low in June. The Commerce Department said new home sales dropped 5 1/3% to an adjusted annual rate of 631,000 units last month. New home sales in the South, which accounts for the bulk of transactions, dropped 7.7% in June. Sales fell 5.2% in the West and tumbled 13.5% in the Midwest. However, sales surged 37% in the Northeast. And an interesting story from Toyota this week. Toyota announced that it's doubling down on its investment in hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, designing lower cost, mass market passenger cars and SUVs, and pushing the technology into buses and trucks to build economies of scale. So as Toyota cranks up improvements for the next generation of its Mirai hydrogen fuel cell vehicle, that's called FCV for short, expected in the early 2020s, it's hoping it can prove wrong the rival automakers and industry experts who have mostly dismissed such plans as commercially unviable. So that's what happened in the stock market in Wall Street. But we have an interesting guest coming up this week, one that we always appreciate hearing from. He is what we call our expert on agricultural production in South America. Max Armstrong will sit down with Dr. Michael Cordonnier and talk about agriculture in South America when we continue on the markets sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Dr. Mike Cordonnier joins us in the studio this weekend. You have been the soybean corn advisor for many years. How long have you had your business, Mike?
Oh, I've been doing this for over 40 years, so it's been a long time.
You have a lot of clients, I presume, not only in the United States, but other countries, too.
Clients around the world, a lot of governments, a lot of the hedge fund folks, all the big names on Wall Street. Lots of folks around the world.
Well, not only do you watch South American crops so well, you follow our crop development here. And that's one thing I wanted to talk with you about. We'll get to that in a moment, but maybe putting the cart in front of the horse just a little bit. We saw an estimate the other day that Brazil's soybean acreage could go up as much as 5% when that crop is seeded this fall, to better than 91 million acres, I think. What's your feeling about that?
Well, I have the area going up 3 to 4%. The Brazilian feel they're in the driver's seat with this trade dispute between the United States and China. So they're very anxious to get out there and take advantage of this. And it's going to be another record crop in Brazil. It makes 2 years in a row now. They're up to about 119 million tons soybean production. Next year, it'll be over 120 million tons. So, and when you increase the soybean area, you automatically increase the corn area as well, because it's a double crop after the soybeans. So I think they're on line here for an increase in both corn and soybean acreage.
That would surpass the acreage of the United States in beans this year, would it not, if they put that much in?
Yes, yes. No, the only reason they haven't surpassed us already is because we keep doing record soybean area here in the United States. But next year, Brazil will have more area than the United States.
What if, I know that's a big what if the trade dispute with China were to be resolved quickly? Is the die already cast simply because they've had those great premiums down there for the beans they've been selling?
Yeah. You know, those premiums in Brazil, they're up to about $2.50 a bushel over Chicago. So actually, prices for soybeans at the ports in Brazil and here in the United States, if we include the tariff, they're about equal. All right. So if this trade dispute is resolved, then the prices go up here in the United States, of course, for soybeans. Then I think just makes the world even better for Brazilians. So I think if the trade dispute is resolved, they will still increase the area. No doubt about it.
What are the Brazilian farmers doing with their newfound funds?
Well, unfortunately, now there's sort of in a holding pattern with this whole dispute over freight rates. There's very little forward contracting for the next crop. Last time I saw Mato Grosso, for example, 21% forward sold for the next crop. Normally it's like about 35% forward sold. Everybody is waiting to see if this freight rate dispute gets resolved. So it's sort of in a holding pattern.
Here at home, as we look at the crop development, the weekly crop bulletins issued by the USDA not only have not shown us declining conditions, actually, I think beans got a little bit better in the past week, didn't they?
Both crops improved a little bit last week. Now, they had been going down for 4 weeks in a row. It improved a little bit. Cooler temperatures, rainfall. I have the U.S. corn crop at 178 bushels per acre.
178.
The USDA in their trend line is like 174.6. But last year was a record corn crop, 176.6, and we're better now than we were last year. So why wouldn't we have a better corn crop? I think the crop is set up really good. Pollination is today maybe 85%, 90%. It was very successful. If August turns out to be even close to normal weather, I think we have a good chance of another record corn crop.
We had quite a bit of heat. The heat, of course, advanced the crop dramatically during the month of June. Many of us were shaking our heads saying, have we ever seen anything quite like that month of June? But did the heat also lingering a little longer, lingering through the nighttime hours, trim yields a little bit in some places?
Yeah, that's what you worry about with these higher temperatures. Now, high nighttime temperatures results in what they call dark respiration, which is the plant does extra effort at night to maintain its cellular structure versus filling the kernels. So anytime the nighttime temperature is over 72, 73 degrees, it's sort of a drag on the corn. Now, that's more important during grain fill, late pollination, early grain fill. So those temperatures in June were not at the critical time yet for the corn. It accelerated the growth. Now, going forwards, if we have those high nighttime temperatures in August, you could trim the yield, but this crop's got a momentum to it, and it would take a pretty dramatic bad weather scene in August to have a significant reduction.
The farmer would hasten to say, doggone it, the crop's not in the bin yet, but when we get to this stage of the corn crop and we are looking this good, it's hard to mess it up, you're saying.
Yeah, it also depends on the soil moisture. Our soil moisture now is better than the long-term average, if you take the whole country as a whole. So good soil moisture. If we have a cool August, then you really got a good chance for a big crop. So the temperatures in August will be very critical.
There are those trouble spots. That hole in western Missouri looks nasty around places like Hamilton and Chillicothe. A farmer friend in Caldwell County, Missouri, was showing cornfields to us that, boy, it was just very bad. Parts of North Carolina, South Carolina, but those areas certainly more than offset by the good abundant yields in the big producing areas.
You know, last Monday, the three driest states were in order, Missouri, and then Arkansas, the two areas you're kind of talking about, and then Michigan. So southeast Michigan is dry as well. So we got the dryness in a certain pockets, and then we had too much rain, northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, so there's some drought out spots over there. So one thing I think we'll see in the August crop report is a lower harvested area for both corn and soybeans. And that's because of the drowned out spots in northern Iowa, southern Minnesota.
That number would come as early as the August crop report, you think?
I think so, sure. Because That report is two parts. One is they actually go out in the field and look, okay. The other part is all these thousands of farmers send in how many acres they will harvest and what they think the yield is going to be. So the farmers who had drowned out spots are going to send in a lower harvested area. So I think it will show up in the August crop report.
Soybeans. We generally assume that that month of August is a great way to finish off the bean crop. And as good as we're looking now, is it virtually assured that we're going to have a great bean crop, especially with the kind of moisture reserves we have in the soil at this point?
Well, I got the soybean crop at 51 bushels per acre. The record was 2 years ago when it was 52 bushels per acre. Now, if you go back 2 years, the third week in July, 13% of the soybeans are rated in excellent condition. As of now, it's 18% rated in excellent condition. So if we have a normal August with a cumulative, you know, some rain throughout the month, I think we're on track for a good possibility of another record soybean crop.
Quite often we get a little bit of tropical moisture in the month of August. Have you looked at that historically and what that does in terms of finishing off the bean crop? I know it's a two-edged sword. Some of that gets dropped in excess in places, especially when you look at the southeast and the Delta region. But conversely, there's some beneficial stuff that shoves right up into the Corn Belt quite often.
Oh, it's a lifesaver for the Midwest. A hurricane comes in. You know, we don't want the damage from the hurricane, but that moisture moves north. And many times, that moisture coming up in August is a lifesaver for the crops, many times.
What else are you watching here in terms of the domestic crop? Anything else on your radar screen that we should be thinking about?
Well, this whole tariff issue, I think, is so very unfortunate. You combine the tariff issue and a very big crop. Of course, you got soybean prices collapse the last couple of months. Where they go from here is going to depend on now the tariff situation, because we know we got a pretty good crop coming on. So big crops mean lower prices, and then big crops and tariffs mean very low prices. So going forward, this is going to be this watch the market, and I'm afraid it's going to be kind of sideways, maybe up a little bit. Farmers are going to resist selling, of course, with these low prices. So that could raise the price a little bit, but we need a resolution to this tariff issue for prices to rebound.
I heard a little chatter in recent days about maybe the bottom being put in of the prices, with trade news perhaps impossible for it to get worse, and the belief that, you know, we've already factored in big crops. What's the possibility of an even larger crop surprise here? Maybe not in the August report, but as we get into September.
Hey, it's possible. Look at last year. Last year, the USDA actually lowered the corn yield in the August report versus March intentions, or what they had been using. And then after that, it went up every month afterwards. So good weather in August, good rainfall, and yes, we could have a surprise to the upside on these crop, you know, productions.
Last year, producers did get some surprises during harvest when they were in the cab, pleasant surprises. So that wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility this year, you're saying?
You know, the genetics now are so good. A little bit of dry weather just doesn't have the same impact today as it did 15, 20 years ago for the corn hybrids and the soybeans as well. So there's more of a potential for an upside surprise production-wise than a downside.
We always enjoy your visits. Come back soon.
Always my pleasure, Max.
Dr. Mike Cordonnier, the Soybean and Corn Advisor.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
I must say that Dr. Michael Cordonnier is one of my favorite guests here on the markets because of his knowledge of agriculture and the competitive nature of agriculture in South America with U.S. producers. And as we take a look at the end of the week's trade in the grain market today, soybean futures moved higher, making it their second straight weekly gain, bolstered by signs of strong export demand. Meanwhile, wheat futures were mixed, with winter wheat contracts easing while spring wheat contracts firmed amid concerns about crop shortfalls. And corn closed slightly higher after trading both sides of the market during the session today. Soybeans priced at a strong discount to supplies from Brazil, prompting a pickup in demand from many countries, even as China, the world's top buyer of the oilseed, continues to shun deals with the United States amid that trade fight. Chicago Board of Trade soybeans for November delivery settled up 9.25 cents, $8.85 a bushel. The September soft red winter wheat futures ended down 6 cents at $5.30 a bushel. September hard red winter wheat down a penny and a half at $5.32 a bushel. Scouts on an annual crop tour of North Dakota, that's the top U.S. spring wheat producer, found below average harvest potential in the year's crop, with hot weather likely curbing production and falling well below the USDA's projection of yields. And so at the end of the day today, the September wheat contract down 6.25 cents. September, December, and March corn all ended the day unchanged. And the August soybean contract ended the day with a gain of 9 cents a bushel. Turning to the livestock futures trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, there we saw live cattle today on the market trading. Let's look at hogs first, because slumping cash prices extended the losses of Chicago Mercantile Exchange hog futures. The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimated this week's total hog processing number at 1,987,000 head. That's 395,000 fewer than last week. And one trader said there's no shortage of slaughter hogs. August hogs ended down $1.25 a hundredweight and ended at $63.65, hit an all-time low for the contract at $63.25. And as we look at the cattle market today, well, we had cattle that today traded pretty much higher for the day. And at the end of the trading session, the live cattle contract at the Mercantile Exchange, the August contract, up $1.07 a hundredweight. The August feeder cattle contract also up $1.07 a hundredweight. October lean hogs ended the day down $1.25 a hundredweight. Well, we're going to close this week's edition with some bright news if you're a beer drinker. I think you'll like to hear the news that we got this week, because the news says brewers will get a good supply of hops, a key ingredient for making beer, as the world hop harvest is likely to reach a reasonable, slightly higher production. Slightly smaller than last year, but still a good crop. And Germany's important hop-growing regions have received enough rain, and the country should have an about-average hop crop there. So the world 2018 hop harvest likely to be slightly lower than 2017, but there will be enough for you to enjoy that bottle of beer. Craft brewers, of course, have added to the demand for hops. Well, on that note, we're out of time this week. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson. Thank you for joining us on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.